This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take up a subject which is of utmost importance because the President of the United States, Donald Trump, recently agreed to call our opioid epidemic in America a national crisis. It's officially an emergency, and it's high time that we address this problem because, well, we thought we had a problem in the 60s and 70s with junkies on heroin, but now we have a high percentage of Americans who are addicted to prescription medications, either obtained legally or illicitly. This is against the background of a still prevalent alcohol addiction problem. Alcoholism is rampant in the United States, and it probably always has been and always will be. And this is a unique perspective on the problem that we're going to bring you today, because today's guest is the founder of Nutrition in Recovery. The concept is that nutrition plays a role in recovery. We've talked about this for a long time. The diet you eat, the way you eat, even the supplements you take can make a crucial difference in the success of your recovery, in your ability to maintain recovery, and your ability to resume an optimal lifestyle afterwards. Today's guest is the founder and director of Nutrition in Recovery. He's David Wiss. David grew up in Los Angeles. He graduated from University of Southern California with a bachelor's degree in social science. And his master's thesis, Nutrition and Substance Abuse, provided a multidisciplinary investigation of the special needs of addicts and alcoholics within the VA healthcare system. And he then went on to found Nutrition in Recovery, which has multiple offices located in Los Angeles, California, and also has options for long-distance treatment through, internet and so on. Nutrition services are available in treatment centers in, of course, Malibu. It seems to be the center for recovery these days. By the way, I grew up in that area.
Interesting.
In Santa Monica, David, and that was before Malibu became a haven for recovery.
Now, right, right.
It's like ground zero for recovery, and there's some beautiful, beautiful facilities there where high-end clients go out and get sober and clean. So thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations. This is a really, really important perspective, and you know what? This is against the setting of our system for helping people recover from opioid addiction is sorely lacking. There's not enough of it, but B, you know, the whole approach may be wrong-headed in a way, because we're talking about just say no, abstinence, but what we need is we need better and more comprehensive support for people suffering from addictive disorders. So how did you get involved in this, and tell us a little bit about Nutrition and Recovery?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. I'm thrilled to be chatting with you today and the listeners of Intelligent Medicine. So I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist, and you know, when I went through school, I learned a lot about nutrition, and I didn't learn enough about how nutrition affects brain chemistry and hormones and gut bacteria. And so I took it upon myself to become very curious about the link between nutrition and mental health, as opposed to just the link between nutrition and physical health, which of course led me to addictions and eating disorders, and now, you know, more recently, depression and anxiety. So I'm in West Los Angeles, right near West LA, Santa Monica, and I had a vision to provide nutrition services to addiction treatment centers, which includes running educational groups where we educate patients about the importance of nutrition in early recovery, middle recovery, late stage recovery. We teach cooking classes and other hands-on life skills workshops. We do individual counseling for addictions as well as general wellness and disordered eating. And some hopefully we get involved in the food service operation to actually step in and create a specific point of view about the food culture in the facility. You know, that's one of the harder parts because, as I'm sure you know, a lot of people that come into recovery, especially after many years of using drugs like opiates and alcohol, other benzos, cocaine, meth, a lot of them may not feel ready to make drastic nutrition changes. So I have found that bringing in the entire spectrum of different services to include improved food as well as a group where we can actually talk about it and then do one-on-one work, it actually works. It gets people to understand the rationale of why they need to heal biochemically and to get people excited about recovery and bringing, you know, healthful eating and sleep and sunlight and exercise and water and all the things that really don't get enough attention in addiction treatment. It appears that, you know, the insurance model for addiction treatment is very much therapy driven and psychiatry driven. Right. And there's almost no attention to physical wellness. So the objective of nutrition and recovery is to promote, you know, mental and physical wellness in the context of nutrition in these treatment settings.
And so what's the basic premise here? Why is what you eat so crucial in recovery?
Yeah, great question. So I think when I originally got interested in this work, you know, the literature and the intuitive kind of direction that I went in was to figure out, you know, which micronutrient deficiencies were associated with different substances. In other words, if an individual has, you know, been eating very poorly for many months or many years, clearly there's going to be micronutrient deficiencies, antioxidant vitamins are going to be low. We're looking at anemia, vitamin D deficiencies, etc. And the original area that I became interested in was just merely correcting nutritional imbalances. You know, I once had a client who was an opiate addict. He was an intravenous heroin user, and he told me that for the last 7 months he had been inside, and the only thing that he ate was a coffee flavored ice cream. Wow. And I believed him. Yeah. I believed him. Yeah. So,
and is that fairly typical among addicts that, as a result of some chemical reaction in the brain, that they just go for sugary or fatty foods and, you know, sort of smooth, delicious textures? You kind of lose the you know, eating like cauliflower and broccoli kind of loses its appeal when you're right on smack or when you're doing meth or coke. And, you know, we've seen, and this is sort of a classic movie trope, is that addicts just love candy. They just subsist right on candy.
That's right. And it is absolutely true. And I think originally investigating this connection, the obvious, you know, connection is that, you know, both substances of abuse and sugar and highly palatable foods are very dopaminergic, and they activate reward pathways that we know are similar. And I think what I've become more interested recently, and this goes back to looking beyond just vitamin and mineral deficiencies, is the link between gut health and substances of abuse. So with something like opiates, you know, the gastrointestinal tract really slows down And we have a little bit of evidence of altered microbiome associated with opioids. But if you really think about it, what's happening is, you know, the GI tract is, slowing down, which makes it virtually impossible for someone who is using to successfully be able to digest that broccoli and that cauliflower. Mm-hmm. So the individual becomes almost intolerant of high fiber foods. And so when I work with people in early recovery, in addition to correcting micronutrient deficiencies, one of the major objectives is to get people to be fiber friendly again, to reintroduce fiber consistently, gradually, and progressively in order to allow their stomach to even be able to handle fibrous foods. Because if someone isn't able to successfully break down fibrous foods, it's a major barrier to a successful nutrition intervention. So I think that the brain chemistry is a huge part of it, the blood sugar as well. Mm-hmm. And the missing link now is, like, you know, what about gut bacteria? What about this other second brain? How can we figure out gut-based treatments for some of these, you know, psychological and psychiatric issues?
You know, when I was in med school, as part of our psychiatry rotation, they said, you need to experience this firsthand. And they said, go to an AA meeting, has kindly consented to allow some of you med students to observe. So we went to the AA meeting, and no, I didn't have to stand up and say, my name is Ron and I'm an alcoholic. Mm. But, you know, they knew I was an observer. But I noticed, you know, I walked in, there was a waft of cigarette smoke. This is back mm-hmm. This must have been in the late 70s or early 80s. Maybe things have changed. There was a table piled with donuts and pastries, and there was giant coffee urns there.
That's right.
And so I was thinking to myself, because I already had a budding interest in nutrition, I was thinking, well, great, you know, we're kicking the alcohol addiction, we're supplanting it with some pretty pernicious addictions. Although
That's
this
right.
is harm reduction, because, you know, you die faster from alcohol, you die more slowly and insidiously from high octane coffee and donuts.
Right. I think that that wisdom originally comes from the, you know, original Alcoholics Anonymous literature, which is all the way back from 1939. And there's a lot of sense in that, you know, approach, being that the first thing is to get the individual past the immediate crisis. So, mm-hmm. When someone's trying to put together a couple days sober, caffeine, nicotine, sugar, those are things that can really come in handy. Mm-hmm. The problem is that at no point does someone, you know, step in and get involved and say, hey, you've been doing this for 2 years now. We need to start thinking about your health.
Indeed. And also, I mean, I think in part of your thesis is that the recovery is incomplete when you don't address nutritional deficiencies, improve your microbiome, improve your diet, get adequate amounts of protein and beneficial fats, because the underlying depression that may have propelled you to addiction will persist because of poor diet.
That's right. That's definitely what I'm seeing, is a lot of people will settle for mediocre recovery, or just have no idea how good life can be in recovery, because they're so used to waking up with a sluggish effect, you know, being having a difficult time concentrating. And I think a lot of people in recovery don't know that with actual healing, using, you know, high fibrous foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts, and seeds, and like you said, high protein diet, good fats, all of the things that we nutrition experts recommend, they can actually get to a place where they wake up and feel bliss and are excited about the day and have less need for a whole list of medications, et cetera.
And that's a perfect antidote to relapse, too, because you don't want just the absence of substance dependency. You want a positive outlook and well-being, which counterbalances the need for exogenous substances. We know that some people are just genetically prone to needing something to jazz some part of their brain that may be deficient in dopamine. And,
that's right.
You know, so we want to balance their brain chemistry. That's a really important aspect of this. Alcoholism, what effects does that have on the microbiome? I imagine, pretty severe.
Yeah. So, alcohol inherently will, compromise the intestinal barrier, which will impact, vitamin and mineral absorption. Can cause, leaky gut per se, yep. quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And, the recent data actually shows that the progression of alcoholic liver disease doesn't, come from the direct effects of ethanol on the liver. Mm-hmm. It's actually coming more from, bacterial translocation. So, little particles, leaking into the bloodstream and actually being brought back to the liver is causing the damage. So alcohol
We know this from one of the earliest experiences I had. Of course, I trained in a VA medical center, as did you. Mine was in New York. Yours is UCLA medical or the VA center in Westwood. Yeah. But right. There are a lot of alcoholics there naturally. And so what we noticed was that when we gave a certain type of antibiotic, which killed off bad bacteria, and we gave them a laxative that got rid of the proliferation of bacteria, they literally expelled it, that their cloudy brain, their hallucination, their shakiness dissipated. This is in alcoholics with cirrhosis. This is known as hepatic encephalopathy, and the treatment for it is antibiotics and laxatives, which are clearly, that's working on the microbiome.
Exactly. I see a lot of potential for, like I said, gut-based interventions. We don't know yet what the best strains are for alcohol versus opiates or other substances, but I have a feeling that in the next 5 or 10 years, we'll have some good data to be able to, create more specific microbial interventions at the gut level.
Mm-hmm. So probiotics might play a role in a protocol for recovering alcoholics, but also individuals suffering from other forms of addiction, because there are studies now that show that probiotics have a mood effect. There's actually a new journal that's been launched called the Gut-Brain Journal, which explores the interaction between the gut and mood and neurodegenerative disorders.
Well, I'm excited about that journal. I can't wait to check that out.
Indeed. Well, we'll get you on the subscription list.
Exactly.
Because it's right in your wheelhouse. So another thing that you talk about is not just what you eat, but how you eat, a disordered pattern of eating. And why does that matter in addiction? I mean, so addicts, they're sometimes, they shoot up or they use a substance and they can go all day without eating. And then maybe around 1 o'clock in the morning, they say, man, I'm hungry. I'm going to go out and have a patty melt, at the local drive-in.
Right.
And chow down. So, what effect does that have on this whole problem?
Yeah, it's such a great question. We know that the hypothalamus is a part of the brain that's involved in addictive processes and pretty much overrides the need to eat. It's also sometimes referred to as part of the appetite center. So when using, eating becomes very much elective. And usually when people get sober, there's somewhat of a rebound appetite that happens, I think, in some ways related to that part of the brain. However, a lot of people still carry some of their previous patterns of, like you suggested, night eating and binge eating, and this can play out in early recovery. One of the things that I have noticed is that, from what we know about hormones, particularly insulin, leptin, and ghrelin, and how they interact with dopamine neurons in the brain, suggests that the longer someone waits to eat, the more rewarding it's going to be when they consume. And that makes a lot of evolutionary sense, right? Being that an individual who's more hungry is going to be more motivated to eat. So I think the brain starts to learn that pattern. And essentially what it looks like is people will skip breakfast and maybe have something really light for lunch or have a couple snacks. But then wait till they're very, very hungry so that they have
the feed bag on. Yeah. And then there's like more gratification from that.
Yeah. So it ends up being somewhat, it mimics, you know, a drug-like experience because you get more of a dopaminergic response from the large dinner and then the eating afterwards. And then that plays out as disordered eating in early recovery. And I think that doesn't get addressed enough. And those are things that I try to educate people on and interrupt.
Okay, great. Well, you've laid the groundwork for a fascinating discussion about nutrition and recovery. We have lots more questions for you, and we're going to focus in part two on specific foods, specific types of foods, but also vitamins and supplements, because you've given this quite a lot of thought. You've actually developed protocols that target people suffering from various forms of dependency. So we'll tackle that in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our guest is David Wyss. He is founder and director of Nutrition in Recovery. It's a series of centers located in Los Angeles, which provide specialized nutrition services to individuals in treatment centers. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.